Hello, 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 and welcome to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Ness Jones, and I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And with me today is...
Stacey Bell from Focused Fun, woo, in the U.S. And with us is...
from Separation Anxiety Solutions in the UK. Hello, 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 and welcome to our latest episode of Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. Today we're going to talk about PDQs. So if you don't know what a PDQ is, it is a pre-departure queue. So we're going to talk all about those and how they affect your training, what they mean, and what they mean to you and your dog. So guys, what do PDQs, what are your favorite PDQs? Go.
I think we should talk about the most common ones first, maybe go through some of them, and then maybe after that we talk about some of the less common ones that people may not be aware of. What do you reckon?
We're all really familiar with talking about PDQs or pre-departure cues, but for people who are new to separation-related behaviors or separation anxiety, pre-departure cues are basically cues or connections that your dog has made with your leaving. So just breaking it down, really just anything that cues your dog that you might be leaving.
Yeah.
So you can think of it like a tip off, can't you? It's a tip off that you're going to be leaving imminently. And there's lots and lots and lots of tip offs that you're leaving that you probably don't even realize that you're doing a lot of the time. But we'll start with the bigger ones. So some of the big ones are keys.
That's probably the biggest one that most people associate with pre-departure cues. Yeah. So you pick up your keys because you're probably going to lock the door or get in the car or something. And so your dog thinks those keys are scary because they are a precursor to your leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So other ones similar to that might be shoes or coats.
Certain shoes. Because dogs know, don't they? Like they know, my dogs know, depending on what shoes I put on, if they're coming with me or not.
Right.
Oh, you've definitely got the we're going for a walk shoes or the we're going for a walk socks. We've even got those as well. I've got
your hiking socks.
When they go on, everybody's like, yeah.
Yeah. And I've got, because my dogs were, I can't get there now. They're not doing it anymore, but jetty jumping or sometimes called dock diving. And so when I do that, I put on these kind of wetsuit shoes. I don't know what they're called. Yeah, and my dogs love jetty jumping and they go absolutely nuts. They see them. Oh, boy. Yeah, and so another one might be if you wear a uniform to work, obviously your dog knows that that's a pre-departure cue. They know that they're going to be left by themselves.
It can also be a difference in routine. Like if you just think about maybe even pre-pandemic, but you might have had a different routine for when you're actually going to work versus a slow weekend morning. And so when they start seeing that going to work routine, you know, and all the components of that, brushing your teeth, maybe showering in the morning, you know, a quick grab of breakfast and coffee and
makeup.
For dogs that are starting to get anxious before you leave, you might even see that anxiety bleeding back earlier and earlier into your routine.
Yeah. I've got a client who's got a little girl and they get her off to daycare. And, you know, when they're, you know, when you've got little kids, you're kind of like a bit, not flustered, but, you know, rushing around because they take so long to organize. So the dog picks up on that and knows exactly what's going on. What other obvious ones or more common ones have we got?
Perfume's another one, I think, for women sometimes. Mm.
Or makeup.
Makeup and perfume. Brushing your teeth. Maybe even blow drying your hair or something like that.
The car is one of those funny ones because it's not, it sort of is pre-departure, but it's not because you've got to go out to get in the car. So by then you've already left. But you can't leave places without the car.
Another one is really, when you think about it, the people that give their dogs Kongs before they leave. Now, obviously, we wouldn't recommend that in general, but that Kong signals that their dog's going to be left.
Yeah.
Less common ones, I think I've mentioned this in a previous episode, but a less common one perhaps, or maybe it is common, I don't know, but putting your dog out for a wee before you leave, so your dog knows that particular wee means that they're going to be left alone, as opposed to, for example, their bedtime wee, when they're quite happy to go out and do their business before they go to bed. But this wee is the scary wee, so they don't want to go out and wee and do their business.
We have I'm gonna say we've got a bedtime toilet queue, which I can't say because if I say it, everybody will get up and run to the bathroom. So it's a particular one that's all about bedtime. But so then definitely another difference, particularly if you say things, because sometimes the other thing is the inadvertent things that we do. So sometimes we don't realise that we're saying things, and we do them all the time. And sometimes we don't realise there's other things that we do. So we think, like with the pre-departure cues, you know, we think of coats, we think of keys, we think of shoes, but sometimes we don't think of the other things that we do, some of the more subtle things.
Mm-hmm.
So things like,
one for me is that I always fill up my drink to take with me. And so I fill up drinks many times throughout the day, obviously. But when I, you know, get shoes on and then go fill up a drink, then Rowan knows I'm leaving. Right. And so it's like, you know, it's different than if we're going on a walk together, then I wouldn't bring a drink with me. But that's another type of one that you can.
Jewelry would be one for me. Like, I don't put jewelry on when I'm taking the dogs out, but if I had to go to, you know, out for a different reason, I might put some jewelry on.
Hmm. Yeah, I used to do that.
That was very wistful, Stacey.
Back in the good old days.
Good old days when we went places.
Oh dear. Remember those days. Gosh. So when we're doing separation anxiety training, then what's the problem with the PDQs? Do we want to put them in? Because it's quite a common piece of advice for people to be told that when you're training your dog for separation anxiety, that you want to take your coat on and off and pick your keys up and put them back down and your shoes on and off. What do we say to people who ask us that?
Don't do it.
Say no.
Why not? Just say no.
Just say no.
That's what we say. I like to tell my clients to kind of divide their pre-departure cues into three things, categories. The first category is drop anything you can drop. The second category is get creative. So change the way, like for instance, keys, just carry it around in your pocket or stash it outside somewhere, like in your garage, if you have a garage, you know, somewhere safe for you, but also somewhere where your dog's not going to see you picking it up. So get creative. Cues to get creative with, and then cues that you have to work on. Like, so a big one that almost everybody needs to work on is the door itself, right? Because you can't really totally drop that one out, although you can use a different door. So I think, you know, getting to the bottom of why we ask our clients to take a good look at the pre-departure cues is just because we want to make it as easy as possible to start out with. If your dog is getting anxious before you even think about getting out of the door, then you're really setting yourself up for, you know, a kind of a harder road. So if we can have them drop all the cues at the beginning and then add them back in later, a lot of times their work is a lot easier.
Yeah. And I mean, when we do it that way, when we add the departure cues in after the fact, after they're being able to cope home alone for a certain amount of time, then what we often find is those cues don't have as much value for the dog, and they're not viewed as big scary things anymore because it was those cues that signaled the departure. Now they can cope with the departure, so now the cues aren't as scary. Some of them will still be, but we work with that, don't we?
And so the reason, and so it's kind of like any other training, right? You don't train a new behavior to your dog at the dog park. You would train them at home with low distractions. And so what we're doing is we're trying to scale everything back, make it super easy or as easy as possible for your dog, and then build from there. Then, like you said, keys aren't scary because they're keys. They're scary because they predict absences. So if you kind of break that connection for your dog, then it's easier.
Which is another reason why we might not use a Kong before we leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because that Kong can become more and more scary to the dog. So using food, and I know this is kind of a off topic, but yeah, the whole idea of using food to get your dog to settle is a misnomer, because that food actually becomes a scary thing.
Things like food and Kongs are often given to people. It's often a piece of advice that's given to people to use food to help with departures, isn't it? And this is the problem, that you can then poison something that, which for the dog might have been previously something that they really enjoyed. You know, a Kong for a lot of dogs is a wonderful thing, and when suddenly you get your Kong out and your dog starts running away, then you know that you somehow managed to pair it with you leaving, and that's, you know, nobody wants that, do they?
So, Kong, right. The Kong, quick run.
Kong, yeah, no. You know something's gone horribly wrong then when they're running off.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I think that's kind of one big misconception that Sarah called forth, was just the work on the pre-departure cues before we work on departure training. And we're saying, no, we don't do that. So what if you drop all your cues and your dog is still getting anxious before you even leave? What do we do then?
Door desensitization?
Yes! Good one.
Do I get the gold star?
Gold star.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, if your dog is... If you literally stand up and start walking towards the door and your dog is getting really upset because they think you're going to leave them, then we have to do, before you can even walk out on the other side of the door, we have to do work around the door and the dog being okay with you walking to the door, touching the door, et cetera, et cetera. So, and get them into that state of mind where they don't care anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
That's before you even get outside.
Yeah. And so we can, depending on the dog, we can break it down into, help you break it down into really, really small steps. And I think the biggest mistake that people make with desensitizing the door or desensitizing other cues is that they push too fast.
Yeah.
So their dog is experiencing anxiety every time they pick up the keys, and they just keep on picking up the keys. And instead of desensitizing your dog to the keys, you're actually sensitizing them to the keys, or making them, you know, is that a duck? What is that, Sarah? Is that coming from you?
It's not me.
No, it's me.
Australia, it's birdie.
It's a crow.
Oh, it didn't sound that? Like a crow. It sounded like a duck. And I'm like, what? What?
It's, no. It's the Australian wildlife.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's, we embrace all animals here.
Usually at this time of day, we've got the kookaburras going off, but we've had some rain and they're still in bed, apparently. But in terms of pushing your dog too hard, Stacey, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, I actually talked about this on my Facebook Live this week on Monday on Separation Anxiety and Dogs Decoded with Ness Jones. Yeah, and talking about people that are doing the training by themselves, and then they hit a roadblock, and they either are going, feel like they're going backwards, or they stagnate at the same time. And in general, it's probably, well, A, they need a specialist to help them move forward, having that specialist eye. But I think they are probably, most of them are pushing their dogs too hard and not appreciating that they're going over threshold.
Okay, so I was trying to think of some other misconceptions surrounding pre-departure cues. And one of them is, you know, a lot of people will say that it's cheating if you either drop the pre-departure cues early on, or that if you change the, I'm not going to say antecedent arrangement, but if you change the environment such that it's easier for your dog.
How is it cheating? I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, well, I like, but isn't that cheating? Yeah, I mean, that's, to me, it's not, because like I said before, when you teach any new behavior, you would make it as easy as possible and then add in the layers. But with this, it's even like you're working with emotions. So it's that much more important to try to start from a neutral place if you can. So some of the things that we do, we talked about dropping pre-departure cues and getting creative with others, and then, you know, having to work through the ones that are left. But I think also something to think about here is if you've been using a particular door in your house to leave, and that door triggers a lot of anxiety for your dog, you know, if you have a secondary door that you can use to leave, I would start training on that, because then you truly have a blank slate, and it's so much easier to change emotions from, you know, or keep it neutral or neutral to positive, than take something that's really scary for your dog and move it to a more neutral or positive, right? So you're just starting at an advantage if you can switch doors.
Yeah, because the first door has got a lot of history around it, hasn't it? So a lot of negative history around it. So if you can, like you say, change the parameters and use a different door that has no history, then you're going to succeed more. But that's not cheating either, I don't think.
No, it's a common thing, though. I've heard people say that, oh, well, you know, they should be all right when you put your coat on and pick your keys up and put your boots on, or they should be all right when you go out of that door. Right. And it's one of those human, I've forgotten the word. But it's that human thing, isn't it? You know, we think things should, it should work that way. They should know how to be on their own. They should be all right in a room on their own. They should be all right. But should doesn't get you out the front door, does it? It's desensitization that does.
And with separation anxiety training, for me, we always want to set the dog up for success. So if that door is scary, then why would you use it if you've got the option to use another one? And of course, people in apartments don't have that option.
That's true. It is true. You don't always have the option. But when you do, it's worth trying it. Or even changing your routine a little bit, if that makes it easier for your dog.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got certain shoes that trigger them, then maybe put them in the car the night before or something like that, so they don't see them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I've had clients who've put clothes in the garage and all sorts so that they can go out in the slippers and whatever, and then get changed when they get out there. And I think we've heard of clients who've had different sets of clothes entirely in the car, so they can go out in one set and get changed. And if that means that you can leave the house and be gone for 3 or 4 hours, then I, for one, would quite happily get changed.
What about adding new things to predict a safe absence? You know, we have this, or at least clients starting out have these cues that predict a scary absence for their dog. What about adding cues to predict safe absences? What do you guys think of that? Like for instance, using a verbal cue. We've talked about this before in other other podcasts. You know, be right back, or what do you say?
I'll be back.
Right. Or that you're going hunting.
Or that I'm going hunting, yep.
Right, right. So sometimes adding a cue that increases your predictability can help the dog. So you're staying or you're coming, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So that can be a verbal cue, or it can be
collar, putting a collar on,
harness on, coming with. So,
and then there's the other ones, there's the inadvertent safe cues as well, which is that this is why. So for those of you who can't see, I'm sat here waggling my glasses because all three of us are sat here wearing glasses at the minute, and I'm pretty sure that we all need them for reading. Do you actually wear them when you go out and about?
No.
Oh, so only for reading. So it can be a massive inadvertent safe cue is having your glasses on because you're looking at your phone or you're looking at a piece of paper or whatever it is to do your exercises. So you're setting a video up, you're setting a camera up, you might be setting your laptop up, you might have your phone in your hand, you might have your slippers on, you might have put your glasses on. So when I was working with Ernie, a massive safety cue would be phone in hand and glasses on. If I've got those two together, he's like, oh yeah, I know that game. You're doing that game again. We like that game because it's safe. So they then become the same. They're still departure cues, but they become safe ones.
Right.
Not done on purpose.
Right. And there's no problem with those.
No, they're good ones.
Right.
But what you do have to watch out for is if you get your laptop out or you put your glasses on and your dog runs away.
Again, you're in trouble.
That we've accidentally.
Exactly. Then you're pushing too hard. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So all these things are good to watch because they can really help you gauge where your dog is in any particular time. You know, if you put your glasses on and the leg it, then you know that you've pushed too hard and you're going to have to rethink it again. So that's why it's definitely worth going slow because you want to create safety.
It's probably a good idea if you think about it to, as you go about your day, get a pen and paper, keep it on you, and everything you do, every little glasses on, glasses off, pick up phone, put certain shoes on, open doors, shut doors, lock doors, whatever. Make a note of them. I did this when I was going to do that. And then you've got some sort of record that you can have a look at the next day and say, oh, I always
think stuff like that is such a good idea. But for me, that's like keeping a food diary. And it's just so hard for me. It is so hard for me to track things like that. I mean, I know it's good to have the information and that's what helps us make decisions about our training plans and all that sort of stuff. But I just also think it's
It's not for everybody. Yeah, I probably wouldn't do it either. I might be saying, hey, guys, do this, but, you know, would I do it myself? I don't know. I might. I don't know.
It's a good idea for other people.
It's definitely an idea. If you've got, I mean, if you think that you might have a cue that, you know, if you think that you've taken out all your pre-departure cues and that everything's okay and you're still having an issue somewhere, it's definitely worth doing then because it could be that, you know, it is something that's, like I say, you know, it's inadvertent, and that's that being the word that we don't realise that we're doing it. So it could be like, you know, today you've got your hair tied back, Stacey, and it's not always tied back. So it could be that, you know, when you put a bobble. Is it a bobble? It's a bobble here. What's it over there?
Rubber band.
Hair band.
Hair tie.
Yeah.
Not a bobble? You don't have bobbles?
No, bobbles are not a thing.
Okay. So over here it might be a bobble. So when you put a bobble in your hair, then they, you know, they might know that you're going out or not.
That brings up a really good point of, if you're in that situation that Sarah's talking about and you think you have dropped all your pre-departure cues and, you know, your dog is still getting anxious before you leave, you can video yourself getting ready to leave. That's something I would be more likely to do than trying to take notes on everything I do. And then you can kind of see what is your dog cueing into.
That's a good idea.
Thanks. But, you know, I don't think I've run into a client where it was difficult for us to figure out what is it that's tipping their dog off. Like, so, you know, I guess there are situations, but I haven't run into that part of the challenge yet.
Yeah. I'll get my dogs and my dogs. I get my clients to start making a list as soon as they sign up with me. Mm-hmm. And then once we get to that time where we start adding them in, they've spent, you know, maybe depending on the dog, you know, 2-3 weeks or more. Hopefully they've made a list. So by that time we've got a really good idea of what they could possibly be before we start adding them in.
Because I've started waiting until probably half an hour now before I put things back in.
Yeah.
Are you guys doing that now?
I prefer to leave it till half an hour. Yeah. And then finding out which are the least scary departure cues and just adding them in one by one.
Yeah, I kind of try to do a balance, like which ones are most important to the client, balanced out with how difficult they are, right? Because I was really nervous after Sarah, you talking about your client with adding in the stairs. And I guess that's not necessarily a pre-departure cue, but it's kind of like the car. It's
pretty scary.
Same categories. It's like after departure, but it's still a departure cue because you're leaving more.
Yeah.
Can we just explain to the listeners what the stairs are, Sarah?
Yeah, I had a client who lived in a apartment, flat, whatever you want to call it, but it was one of the old-fashioned ones that we've got here in the UK, where it was an old terraced house. So once she left the exit door of her flat, she then had immediately in front of the door several flights of stairs to get down to the actual exit door of the building. So of course, even though she was doing the departures and going out onto the stairs, as soon as she got to a certain point down the stairs, the dog would then fall apart. So we'd have to work then on desensitizing the actual stairs to a point where we were going all back to one step at a time, because the dog, it was once she got to, I think it was the landing, the first, she'd had like two landings that she'd get to, and it was when she got to the first landing that was just the point where the dog would fall apart. So there was some particular noise or some difference around there that the dog could hear, that she then knew that the owner was leaving. So that was interesting when we put that back in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how did it go?
It went well. Once we figured out that, you know, that just where to, you know, where and when to do it, and to do it separately from, so we still did the departures where she would just wait outside the door, and then we also added in shorter departures where she would just go down two stairs and come back, go down three stairs and come back. But then obviously once we got to a point where she was going so far down, then it became a case of going down there and waiting, because the time it took to get all the way down the stairs and back up again was, I think it was about a minute and a half. So we had to make sure that we'd got that before she could go all the way to the bottom and back up again. Otherwise she'd fall apart while she were halfway back again. So it was interesting.
I've had some apartments, you've got to factor in a lift. Mm-hmm. Like, and for people in houses, especially here in Australia, you've got like garage roller doors and things like that as well, which can be problematic.
Well, with garage doors and cars, you know, it's hard because you can break them down to make it easier for the dog, but only so much. Like you can't break them down as much as you can break down going to the door or going down the stairs, or, you know, at some point, especially if it's an automatic garage, you have to push the button and it just does it, right? And so those can be a bit trickier for sure.
So when we're talking about pre-departure cues and how they work in the separation anxiety exercises, for me, putting them back in again, What we want is a dog that's had lots and lots of practice at really small departures so that they get lots of what we call padding behind them. So they've got lots of safe departures and they're getting used to the fact that you're going outside the door and everything's okay and that the world isn't going to end. So then we need to put those pre-departure cues back in again at some point. So for me, I normally leave it around 30 minutes or so. So once we've got to a duration, so once we've got to a point where you can leave your house for 30 minutes, then we can put those cues back in again. And I found that once you get past a certain time, that they generally ease back in a lot easier than they would do if you tried to put them back in at a 10-minute duration, say. Mm-hmm. And you guys are the same?
Yes, yeah. I wait till I not only wait until 30 minutes, but I wait until they're like a consistent 30 minutes. So it's not like they did a personal best of a 30-minute departure and then, I wait until it's pretty consistent and then I go ahead and add that back in.
Sure. Same.
So we're hoping that by then they don't mean anything anymore because they're no longer predicting you leaving because you've not been using them.
Right.
Yay. Right.
Yeah. And if they, I feel like if they do still carry a little bit of weight, then it's a lot easier to work through them than if we had added them in, like you said, early on in the training.
And cows, cows are just so huge, aren't they? Like you said, you can't split them down far enough. You can't get away from driving away, can you? No matter what you do.
So guys, if you were training by yourself, how hard do you think it would be to figure this stuff out with your departure cues, when to add them in, what they are, and all that sort of stuff?
You mean without professional help?
Yeah.
I think given the amount of information that's out there on the Tinternet, Tinternet, yeah.
What?
The internet?
Tinternet.
Yeah.
Interweb.
I think that might be a northern thing on the internet. So given the amount of information that's out there, I think it would, for a lot of people, it's very, very difficult because I know that a lot of clients, when you get them, they've already done all this stuff and they tell you that, that I've been putting my coat on and off and it's not getting any better. So you know that that information is still pervasive, it's still massive, it's right up there, and there's very few people that come away from that information unscathed by the time you see them.
It's true. Yeah. I agree. I think that the information that's like most pervasive on the internet about desensitizing to pre-departure cues is not the way that we would guide somebody to go through it.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's how even, dog trainers are traditionally taught, isn't it? So that's what they tell their clients when they're trying to, teach their dogs to be home alone.
Yeah. Well, and it's not only that. I think the problem with what you can find on the internet is twofold. One, as we discussed, waiting until later makes it a much easier job for you and easier on your dog, but also the whole risk of sensitization. Instead of helping them overcome their fear of the cues, people are making them more salient to the dog, and by just pushing a little bit too hard, because hardly ever do you see a training plan on the internet on how to desensitize to the door in a way that it's broken down enough for a dog that has actual fear of you walking out the door.
No. And partly because when you get plans like that are broken down to that extent, they look massive.
Oh, right.
When you look at them, you go, oh my God, you look at that, I can't do that. But then when you actually get into it, you realize that because it's broken down so beautifully small, that actually it becomes a lot easier because you can't really go wrong. You know exactly what step to follow next, which does in the long run make your life a lot easier.
Okay, well, thank you everybody for joining us on this episode of Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. Today we talked about pre-departure cues, what they are, why we care about them, what we can do to work through them, and where in training we should kind of plop them in, and the risks of moving too quickly. So hopefully you learned a lot during the episode, but hit us up if you have any questions. I am Stacy Bell, and you can find me at Focused Fun Dogs on Facebook and Instagram, and focusedfun.net on my website. Sarah.
And you can find me, Sarah McLaren, on Separation Anxiety Solutions on Facebook and my website, both by the same name. Thank you for listening again. So kind.
And I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. You have been listening to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and other listening apps. If you like us, please give us a 5-star review, follow us, and share us so other people can find us as well. Thanks for listening.
Bye.